Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today, Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to have you here.
Well, I want to wish you a happy Monday, Dr. Paul, and I also want to say hi to all of our live followers, and especially our super chatters that keep us going. We're happy to see you this Monday morning, Dr. Paul.
Very good. Well, one of these days, we're going to need to, because there are things rumbling around the world, and we've been concentrating on the most immediate crisis that the American people are facing. Of course, that's coronaviruses and the economy and all this. But there are still some hot spots around the world, and people stirring up trouble and wanting to start a war. So far, right now, at least on the surface, we hear that Trump is trying to bring troops home rather than sending more over. But then again, what we have to wait for is what really happened. But we do, and I think we'll continue to watch it very carefully. But for now, we're going to concentrate on the things that we think the American people are most concerned about. And right now, it's still coronaviruses and our personal liberties. And this is a big deal. And getting the truth is a big deal, too, to find out what's really going on. And there's an interesting article by the leader of the opposition to sanity, and that's Fauci. You know, Dr. Fauci has all of a sudden been ordained as the spokesman for coronavirus, but could it be that he might be losing some of his authority? There's reason to suspect that this might be happening, that it's not gospel, everything he says. Because the article that we're going to look at here is Fauci's. Some Americans, this is Fauci's talking, some Americans have an inconceivable distrust for authority.
Uh-oh.
And my first comment was, thank goodness. But, you know, which authority is he talking about? Scientific authority, data authority? No, his authority. That's all. And he does complain about, you know, the people don't want to believe the science. They don't want to believe our numbers. They're not scared as much as they used to be. They want to open up, but it can't be the case. And we'll talk about that a little bit later on, of the people who are still spouting off this propaganda. But Fauci looks a little bit disappointed, and he wants to define the truth, whether it's science or statistical analysis, and he wants to keep the people scared, and he thinks that automatically the American people say that we have to obey authority. And, proper authority is one thing. There are some people have moral authority. Some people have parental authority. But that's not what they're talking about. They're talking about canned authority. And who speaks for this? Who speaks for foreign policy when we have to send kids off to fight wars that make no sense? Who are the authoritarians? Of course, I think that's what life is all about, is seeking out the truth. And governments generally have not been good at that. From the very beginning of history, there's been lots of problems with, the authoritarians who want to run things and believe they have a God-given right to be the authority. And yet the whole principle of liberty is challenging that authority and morality is something that is very personal and can't be dictated to, because sometimes they mess it up. And what we have done on this program is try to point out when they really do mess up on pretending that they know what the answer is. They know exactly what to do when there's a bad virus out there. And, of course, my conclusion of this really has been around for a long time, but I think they should be out of this business. Government shouldn't even be in this business of health care and scaring people and managing things and controlling this completely. So, yes, I think it is conceivable that people distrust authority, and we want to help make sure that they distrust the authority that is fake, the fake authority. There's way too much. The bigger the government, more fake authority there is, because all big government has to, they have to deal with fake authority, whether they're going to war or run the economy or tell people how to live or tell people how they can survive the coronavirus. So I guess we'll be talking about this issue for a little while longer.
Well, Fauci's whining and complaining that no one listens to me anymore. This isn't fair. I don't get on the shows I used to get on. They don't believe my authority. But how many times has he had to change his tune? Don't need to wear a face mask. Don't worry about it. You better wear a face mask. And then a couple weeks after that, well, I wear mine just as a symbol for what people should do. Remember that? And millions will die, billions will die, and then less will die. And so the reason why he's lost his authority is because his 15 minutes of fame are gone, and he's been so wrong. But what is frightening, Dr. Paul, is that when Fauci goes down because people are just frankly sick of hearing him, other people rise to the top. And we've talked about Scott Gottlieb for a while last week, and he's a former FDA director, administrator, who now you see all over the news. He's cited on all the news channels, and in fact, he was on Fox over the weekend, and he was warning about a major outbreak is underway. He talks about this. Listen, this is a quote from him talking to Chris Wallace, I think. We're having a major outbreak underway. There is no question about it. They may be past the point that they can control this with simple interventions, like trying to get more people to wear masks and being mindful of social interactions. We may have to start closing businesses down again. It sounds terrifying. We're back to square one. The interesting thing about Gottlieb that you never see when he's on TV making these scary predictions is he jumped straight from the FDA, as we talked about last week, to Big Pharma, where he's making a ton of money. And if this coronavirus thing fades away like we see in the numbers we're looking at, his company is stand to lose some money. Not to suggest there's anything untoward about his alarmism, though.
Right, and as this has been diminishing in effect and generating all the fear that they want, and then they start talking about, well, there might be a second wave. Well, the second wave evidently is awfully close, and then they report the statistics. But they have to be a little careful, because when they get outlandish, they get caught at it, too. But this one headline here, it starts with the confirmation that it's here, and you better not open up the economy again. It says nearly 9 million infected, as WHO says, outbreak. Still accelerating. It's still going up. We know for sure, obviously, following the largest daily jump live updates. So once again, the headlines, that's what every day it seems like we have to say the same old headlines. And then when you go and look at the facts, probably one of the most important things is how sick are the people? How many people? What are the odds? How many people are going to die? And we do know that there are certain categories. Even just recently, there were some reports of people who did die. Yeah. But they happen to be people who had other illnesses, and they're still reporting, just as in general, people in nursing homes, and we know that's different. But they never say the same thing and say, well, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to keep kids out of the sun and not playing baseball and not going to school. They work very hard. If they see that coming, if the Gauchis of the world see this coming, then they feel challenged. And yet, Gottlieb, I can't imagine that we should say, well, at least we got somebody new and he'll probably straighten this out and give us only honest scientific evidence.
Well, the fact is, and two things you won't see. First of all, they really did turn nursing homes into concentration camps. That should be all the headlines, and no one's really talking about it. That's a big deal, I think, and that's half of the deaths in the country, caused by that. And the other is, even just here in Texas, and I look at the Texas numbers all the time, from what I can see, from what I can read in the charts, is that in a population of, 29 million people live in Texas, the people under 30 years old, there have only been 20 deaths from coronavirus, according to their own statistics. Again, that is a tragedy for these people. We don't know what their comorbidities. Even young people can have serious illnesses. But that's not a lot. I bet more young people committed suicide than that 20 in the period. But it was actually Tom Inglesby who was interviewed on Fox by Chris Wallace. Gottlieb was on CNBC. Pardon my mistake on that. But he was interviewed over the weekend. He's the director of the Center for Health Security at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And he said the spikes... They're all talking about the spikes in Arizona, Texas, and Florida. That's the big one. That's right. Why everyone's terrified. Arizona, Texas, he says, they're not simply the result of increased testing. That can't be the case, because that's what we've claimed. You do more. Even Trump said, you do more tests, you get more cases, which seems pretty logical. He said, no, That's not really the case. He said, I think it's a combination of more testing and a real and important spike in many cases. And you can distinguish what is more testing from more serious disease by looking at hospitalization rates, ICU rate, and percent positivity of the overall tests. And that's what I think we should look at a couple of charts here. First of all, I had the first chart. This is the New York Times front page of today. This is their coronavirus ticker on the very top. And this is their, they had an alarmist article about how this huge surge and huge spike, new cases, 20% increase in the last 14 days. But look underneath it. That's interesting. A 43% decrease in deaths. So the question, Dr. Paul, is if you're getting a lot more cases, but a lot fewer deaths, and I'm not a scientist, I'm yeah. just a person, but it's either the virus is getting a lot weaker, or it has to do with doing a ton more testing and just finding out that a lot more people had it than they thought had it in the first place. It's just running through society. It seems to me it has to be just one of those two things. And the next one, and I'll turn it back to you, but just the next clip here is just deaths, and I follow this every day. Look at the alarmist headlines in all the papers and in all the shows, and then simply look at the chart of daily new deaths in the United States. It's essentially the same as it has been. It reached a peak in early to mid-April, and it's been going down ever since then. So to me, those are the numbers, it seems like, that counts.
Right. Now, you described the nursing home sort of like a concentration camp. And what about stay at home?
Yeah.
Which has caused all the mental anxiety and suicides and things like that. That's a form of prison. And I keep thinking, you know, we're so much nicer, you know, than other countries when they had concentration camps, which on the surface, you know, look much, much more vicious, but the consequences are the same. I've talked to people who've had their parents or somebody in a nursing home. They ended up hardly ever seeing them, couldn't go in the same room, and really making it just a, you know, a horrible, horrible place for them. So I think there's something to that, but it's seen as our concentration camps are humanitarian. Yeah. You know, we're taking care of them and protecting them from getting an illness. But I think a lot of this is getting people to be conditioned, you know, conditioning them and on control. So we have the virus, and a lot of this was nonsense. I think it deflected from an honest discussion on how serious coronavirus is, and it is very serious, but they ought to have it in proper perspective. But I keep seeing an analogy to the same type of scare tactics they used after 9/11.
Yeah.
You know, it was permanent. You know, the changes were permanent. And they've told us that the changes are going to be permanent. They're going to get away with as much as they can. And that's why the number of people, the popular support, there's still a lot. They're saying, oh, you guys don't care. You guys don't
yeah.
care. And but if some, they, and so they endorse all this, and they're sort of go along. We know it's uncomfortable, but we have to go along. We have to do what they tell us to do. And but it's this idea that it's an acceptance of control
yeah.
and a conditioning of that. And you know, look how we've been conditioned. And unfortunately, I confess, you get never happily, but I had to deal with the TSA.
Yeah.
You know, and they, you know, just even when we debated the TSA, I said, there's a better way. There's a better way. Put the responsibility on the airlines. I said, it's their responsibility. But no, we went with government authority, and we have the Gestapo agents there and doing all kinds of horrible things. So that, to me, is the long-term thing, and that's why they have to maintain this out there of credibility. They have to convince people that they are the authority, and that you have to listen to them. So we'll have to continue to challenge that, but people will eventually have to wake up. Numbers of people have already started, and they've helped already. You know, the people who have stood up against some of these unreasonable regulations, and I think that's help motivate to go and have more openness. But I wished I could say, well, it's moving in the right direction, it'll be okay. But all of a sudden you see the headline, oh, missed it. It's getting worse. It's not getting better. So we're the ones, they say, we're providing false information. We're unscientific. And they have the bully pulpit. And unfortunately, they do reach a lot of people.
They do, and they scare a lot of people. You know, people are putting their masks back on. They're putting them on. They're being diligent. But doctors Gottlieb and Inglesby, who I mentioned earlier, they both said this is not just because of increased testing. You can't say that. It's not fair. You've got to look at hospitalizations and positivity percentages of the test. And so let's look at a couple of the hot spot areas that they're warning about. Let's look at the next clip. Let's talk about hospitalizations. This is the hospitalization rate in Texas. And look at that. It doesn't look like it's going up. Look at it, it looks like it's going down to me. Maybe I'm not a good scientist, but you should see a spike. If it's all about hospitalization rate, you should see a spike. It's not there. Let's look at the next hospitalization rate that we have. Hospitalized by date of hospitalization. This is Arizona. You saw an increase toward the end of May, but the trends, at least for the past couple of weeks, have been lower. So how do you square that circle? And what about percentage of positivity? Let's look at the next one. This is another thing they say. You have to look at that, too. Well, here's Florida. Positive tests dropped 4%. So it is a decreasing. It did have a spike, so I don't want to try to pretend that it didn't. But it's now decreasing in Florida. But now let's look at just the daily deaths, because we looked at the U.S. Let's look at a couple of these charts. Daily deaths in Texas, yes. Mid-June, a couple of days ago, there was an increase in deaths. It doesn't look like it's completely anomalous because it dropped right off. There was a spike and then it dropped right off. Let's look at the next one in Florida. Here's the Florida deaths. These are the hot spots. Same thing, going down, decreasing. I think one of the days there was, I think on the 19th, there were zero deaths. Let's look at the other thing, though. They say, no, you can't just say it's testing, Dr. Paul. It's hospitalization, which these charts kind of tend to disagree with. It's percentage, it's kind of disagree with. It's not testing. Well, let's look at the next chart. This is what's happening in Texas on testing. Look at this, Dr. Paul. This is the amount of testing. It's a massive, massive increase. June 20th, 67,273 tests. That's a lot of extra tests that they're doing. So it just doesn't seem like what we're seeing in the numbers adds up and comports with what they're saying on the TV to scare people.
Well, you know, they are worried about it. Fauci's worrying about that he's going to lose credibility. But there's always planning. De Blasio is an example of planning, you know, the strategy, what they're doing, because he loves this idea of contact tracing. And of course, we know that Gates loves it, and he wants to make it permanent and universal on everything that we do, and that it will be embedded into us if he had his way. But de Blasio, you know, had a test up there in New York. And it's interesting, he's in New York City, and they have a Department of Health, but the program was not done by the Department of Health. It might have had a little bit of knowledge about it. So he took it out of there. It's interesting to see how much it cost. Had to cost a couple bucks because he hired 3,000 people to start tracing. And they virtually stop it because it was a total failure. People didn't answer it, and they didn't get the responses, and they probably didn't get the responses they liked. But they're annoyed with that. That's why they have to keep this coronavirus thing going, but they're just waiting for the next thing to come along so that they can say, this is what we have to do. We have to prevent it. We need more of this. But this is another setback for them, you know, this contact tracing. In New York. They essentially admit it was a failure. I don't know how much attention this will get, but they can't brag about it.
Well, they hired thousands of these contact tracers going around snooping on everyone. Tell us everyone you've had contact with. People are saying, forget you. I'm not going to tell you that information. People aren't stupid, you know. They don't want to get in some database. So it looks more like a jobs program. Like you say, they pulled it out of the health department and put it in who knows where. But it's a story we saw on Zero Hedge that referenced a New York Times article saying that New York City's contact tracing has been a total failure. so furious. It was successful in other countries because people went along and they agreed. And, you know, places like China, oh, okay, well, let's be more like China, where we listen to everything the state tells us. It's amazing how they love to hold that up as the model when it comes to authoritarianism. But it does make you wonder what might happen with Texas, because, you know, our governor had to sign this very controversial contract with a company to spend a third of $1 billion, go around contact tracing Texans, knocking on their doors, where did you go, who did you see, who did you talk to? I can't imagine in Texas it's going to do any better than New York. I hope Texans will be even more individualistic than New Yorkers.
You know, most people think in a positive way about Texas. People move here to get away from California and different places. But I wish we were more immune to that nonsense, because I've read some statistics that aren't very encouraging when you look at our state capital.
Yeah.
And for many years, a lot of people thought there were two Texases, that Austin didn't represent Texas. But there's a lot of room in Texas. Let's hope there's enough independence out there that will not go along with all this nonsense. But it's something that we can't ignore, and they're determined. They have a lot of money. They have the media on their side. They have a lot of political people on their side. Trump has probably suffered a whole lot from this because he was closer.
Yeah.
His instincts were closer, but then he had to give in, and that's an understandable thing. It's tough, but he ultimately is probably going to suffer from this, and just think of the confusion that he had to challenge by just getting some people together and having an old-fashioned political rally, as if, oh, if you come, you're all going to die from coronavirus. And there was a lot of shenanigans going on there as well.
Yeah, that was a big thing. I mean, that's one of the reasons we suspected that there was this talk of the spike, because they wanted to terrify people. And again, everyone accuses us, oh, you're in the bag for Trump. We're not. We're trying to just look at what's going on. So the media scared people to death. Then a bunch of thugs showed up to harass people that wanted to go to the rally. And then you had this reportedly some shenanigans going on with pretending to request tickets or requesting tickets and not showing up. So a lot of stuff was happening there. But I'm going to close out, Dr. Paul, and I'm going to do a triple play. I'm going to mention three people we like.
Oh, good.
And one of them is Bob Wenzel, and he had it on his site, Target Liberty, so he's first. And the second is Thomas Massey, because it's a tweet from Thomas Massey. And I'm going to read the tweet. This is we talked about Bolton's new book and the revelations from Bolton's new book. Here's something that our friend and colleague Norm Singleton sent me over the weekend. Something that came out of the book that Bolton was upset about. And here's Massey's tweet. If, as John Bolton supposedly implies in his book, Rand Paul, the third person we like, convinced Trump not to make Bolton his Secretary of State, then Rand Paul deserves the Nobel Peace Prize and a thank you from the president. So that's a great story that the president wanted to make him Secretary of State, and he said, that blank, 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 Rand Paul, he's going to get in the way, and he's not. Thank God he was not successful
right.
in that.
Well, Rand got to visit us. He doesn't get here as often as he would like, but he got here and played a lot of golf with
Good.
His siblings. And when he was leaving this morning, I said, just remember, Rand, you got to go along to get along.
I'm sure he'll listen to that.
Yeah. So, no, and some of those independent positions he's taken, he does get a lot of heat, and he will get heat from this. But long term, the longer it's around, the more it'll work its way out. Truth does win in the end, no matter what Fauci tells us. The truth will win out in the end, and I think that's the reason that we feel comfortable. And that doesn't make us all-knowing, but the truth is pretty much available to us. But these people that fudge the numbers and distort economic policies and just live in denial, and now you read in the paper, even some of these Marxists admitted, well, that is our goal. Our goal is to destroy the country and destroy, to destroy liberty and all these things, so that they will admit it because they want to undermine it, undermine our whole system. And they're doing a pretty good job of it. And there's days when I try to look at everything as a positive thing, but there are some days I think, holy man, why are the people listening to them? And why do they get elected to certain offices? So it's a bad time that we live in when you think about, have we turned the bend and have headed back to increasing the amount of liberty we have, or are we going to continue the trend that's been around, unfortunately, for a long time? You know, ever since the progressive era 125 years ago, it's been pretty much downhill for the cause of liberty. But the cause of liberty is well known. We understand it. We know what it means for prosperity and for personal liberty. We know what it means for monetary policy. We know what it means for foreign policy. All that is so great, it sort of reflects on so many of us. Why can't we do a better job in presenting our case for liberty? And that's what the founders tried to do. And of course, it was weakened a bit, you know, by our Constitution. But they had the right idea. It was better than any other country ever did. But right now, we really need a boost in confidence and to sort out the truth from what the people who believe in liberty versus Gauci and Gates telling us that they're being discriminated against because nobody will believe them anymore. So there's room for some optimism, but there's also room for assuming a lot of responsibility, because everybody has a responsibility to do something, even though it's one person a day or one person a week. You need to spread the message. And before the internet, that was the only thing we have. And even today, with the controls on the internet, you can still go back to the old-fashioned way of spreading a message. That's the most important thing. Intellectually, people understanding what liberty is all about and why it benefits everybody, why it is the thing that can provide peace and prosperity. And that, of course, is what our goal is. So, and we appreciate so much all our viewers tuning in each day. And please come back soon.